It is time to go. We have Joe Thompson here from the Durker chapter, and he is talking about drugs and baseball. Too much, too fast, too young. Major League Baseball's struggle to control its menacing drug problem. Welcome, Joe Thompson.
Thank you all very much. I've always been told I tend to talk a little loud, so I might need the mic, I might not need the mic. So I have this up here, and I'm going to go ahead and get started because I have a lot of material I want to talk about, and unfortunately I only have 20 minutes to talk about it. So first of all, I want to take everybody back to the 2005 steroid hearings and something that our commissioner, Selig, said. Baseball had no drug problem at all before I took over. None. Zero. It was only in the 90s that these programs began to develop. We have a program in place. None of my predecessors had a program in place. Now, as an Astros fan, I really hate to disagree with Commissioner Selig again. Like the 2005 World Series, we should have kept the groove closed. And also the Astros in the American League. But I wanted to remind Commissioner Selig that actually there was a drug program in place. So Selig is actually wrong in 2 points here. There was drug programs in baseball well before he became commissioner, dating all the way back to the 70s. There was even a drug program agreed to by management and the MLBPA in 1984, even though it was short-lived. So whether Commissioner Selig was talking about a joint program agreed upon with steroids or whatever he meant, to the general public like me, when I was watching the steroid hearings in 2005, I just thought to myself, well, that couldn't possibly be true. So what am I going to talk about today? I'm going to talk about what I call the pre-steroid drug era. Now, I have these question marks here because we really do not know when it started. And some people say it goes all the way to the 1980s. That's when steroids really kind of comes on the scene. So I'm going to focus on the Bowie Kuhn and Peter Ueberroth administrations because they were the first baseball commissioners to directly address this issue. And I briefly just give you a little abstract. What I'm trying to say here is the failure of management and the MLBPA to maintain and expand upon the first anti-drug program created by Bowie Kuhn's administration in 1971 was the result of coercive actions by the commissioners and constant conflict with the MLBPA. And this right here is a quote from Charles Alexander. I know some of us have probably read Alexander's work before, Ty Cobb, things like that. He says in Our Game, the public image of professional baseball players by the end of the 1980s was that they were a bunch of pampered, overpaid, cocaine-snorting millionaires. So I thought that was kind of a unique quote by Mr. Alexander, or Professor Alexander. And I have, of course, here a picture of Doc Ellis. We all know his infamous stories. But he actually said one time he couldn't pitch without pills. So real quickly, I'm going to give us a little context of where we're going to be. Now, as far as I can tell, I've been doing this research for a while, drug use in baseball by professional players or amateur players dates all the way back to the 19th century. Now, we have, of course, the stories of Thomas Barlow, and there was an infamous 1896, a precursor to the World Series where apparently John Ward and Ossie Gray was using some sort of steroid-like substance or drug substance to perform, you know, enhance their performance. And then there's one in particular story that you may have heard, you may haven't heard, but it's of James Pud Galvin. Pud Galvin, of course, as many of you know, is in the Hall of Fame. But he became baseball's first steroid user. He, in 1877, his career was falling, and in 1877, Charles Brown Sicard came up with this brand new invention. And I don't know all the science of it, but it was this elixir of life. And James Pud Galvin, of course, volunteered. And after taking this elixir, his performance just magically, overnight, it was like he was young again. You know, he was pitching shutouts and things to that effect. So those type of stories need to be researched a little bit more, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking any more about that. And quickly, go up to the 1960s and 70s, we have the late Jim Brosnan, who wrote Pennant Fever in the Long Season. And then, of course, we have Jim Boughton. Jim Boughton said, if you had a pill that would guarantee a pitcher 20 wins but might take 5 years off his life, he'd take it. And of course, Boughton's many stories are funny and hilarious. I think there's one story in there where I think it's Pete Rose is running for a ball and he can't quite dive for it. And the ball bounces in front of him by like 5 feet. And somebody leans over to Boughton in the dugout and says, hey, 5 more milligrams and he would have had it. And of course, Pete Rose finds out about that. And then the next time Boughton's on the mound, Rose in his sort of shouts expletives. Something about comparing Boughton to Shakespeare or something like that. Something to that effect. But it was a funny story. But I wanted to let everybody know on Bill Gilbert, longtime columnist for Sports Illustrated, who wrote a series of articles in 1969 concerning the rapid use of drug use in sports. He wrote that sports needed to address its problem before a player lost his or her life because of drug use. I don't know if anybody has read those series of articles, but they're pretty fascinating. One is actually called Where's the Dexamil Doc? And that goes back to Brosnan. So kind of quickly here, we're all set here at the 60s and 70s, and the United States decides to pass the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act. And it's the first time the United States really changes their policy on how they're going to handle drugs, and there's even some rehabilitation efforts. So Bowie Kuhn, with all these press reports and everything going on, in Boughton's book, he decides baseball really needs to do something. So in 1970, he forms the Association of Professional Baseball Players, and they study drug use in the game. And Boughton said the tremendous increase throughout the country in the use of narcotics and illegal drugs and the advice of baseball teams' physicians concerning the dangers to players and others who might use drugs indicated the need for baseball to initiate a drug education prevention program. So in February 1971, he starts his program. And the four objectives is to keep baseball free of any drug problem, protect the health and safety of players, preserve the honesty, integrity, and good name of baseball, and also to create community action programs. And each year, baseball would review the program. In 1978, they decided to add alcohol. Now, the implementation of the program was in the spring training in 1971. And he talked to teams' reps and told them the objective of this program. It is not meant for major league players, so to speak. It is meant for minor league players and young players signing their first professional contracts. And here is something from here's an article from the New York Times that talks about the seminars. Now, in the seminars, there was a consultant appointed, guidelines for trainers, and team physicians held their first annual meeting. Now, disciplinary procedures against players were planned at the outset, but Kuhn was never really specific. And he said, but he wanted to make sure that all baseball personnel lived and operated within federal and state drug guidelines. Now, an important aspect of this was the community action programs. And I got this from the Bowie Kuhn collection at the Hall of Fame. This notice number 12, April 5th, 1971, requested each baseball club seek ways in its city and community to increase its participation in community action programs. And baseball players were urged to volunteer to help the youth of America stay off drugs. And here are three volunteers, Larry Boa, Yaz, and Ernie Banks. Kuhn's program became the first of its kind in sports because it was the first such program established to educate its personnel on the dangers of drug use and discipline those who violated the policy. Discipline matters, of course, would be held on a case-to-case basis. And here is Baseball versus Drugs. Interesting story about this book. This was distributed all over the country in 1971, and each baseball player who signed a contract got the book. Now, when I started looking for it in 2008 and 2009, I couldn't find it anywhere. In a book that seemed to go all over the country, and granted it was 40 years ago, you would think there would at least be some copies. The only copy that I can find in existence is at the Hall of Fame. And the booklet was distributed to everyone. It featured characteristics of drug abusers, full-color graphics, and the book also outlined the 1970 act signed by President Nixon. And here are some graphics. Now, critics of his program, I'm just going to go through some of these. Lou Brock called it neither preventive nor corrective. It was interesting. Lou Brock also said, if you've got to get up for a World Series game artificially, then there's something wrong with you. And Chuck Dobson also said, I like to see him put on a uniform for 162 games in 180 days and then see what he says. But Kuhn also had some supporters, especially in Congress. Congressman Harley Staggers of West Virginia privately commended baseball as having the best drug program in sports. Now, the funny thing about that is that during the 2005 steroid hearings, baseball was reminded of what Harley Staggers said, because Harley Staggers also said that at this time, Congress doesn't need to get into this. Self-regulation should be, you should achieve it, but if you can't, we will readdress this at a different time. And Congress did do that. Now, Bowie Kuhn decided to use his disciplinary powers based on the powers given to him in the Major League Constitution. And I'm not going to read them, but here they are, basically. Just briefly, to investigate either upon complaint or upon the commissioner's own initiative, any act, transaction, or practice charged. Now, Kuhn was going to use this disciplinary power because he believed the best commissioners acted. And as many of you know, he was a huge admirer of Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who never seemed to take no for an answer. And Kuhn writes in 1992 in an article ruling with the Iron Fist that, "I want my sports leaders to be Hefe, Ichiban, or worst fate, Czar. I want to see them driving with lightning and thunder to throttle the devils that beset us." And of course, as his model, he was using Kennesaw Landis. Now, to get in his way, that was, of course, the MLBPA. And there were two, especially in the beginning, Marvin Miller did whatever they could to significantly weaken the powers of the commissioner. The 68 agreement was the establishment of a formal grievance procedure, and the 70 collective bargaining agreements basically took the commissioner as disciplinarian, his role, out and replaced it with an independent arbitrator. The four suspensions, Kuhn's four suspensions on drug-related charges, Ferguson Jenkins, the Kansas City Four, as I call them, and Pascual Perez, their violations were all either overturned or reduced. Now, as we all know, Kuhn and Miller never really got along. Miller says, "To my mind, the most offensive and distasteful actions of Kuhn's baseball career were directed against players accused of misdeeds away from the baseball field." And he also said Boo was a bad loser. Basically. So we move on to the 80s, when cocaine starts to become an issue. And with the emergence of cocaine, Kuhn required all clubs in 1981 to have employee assistance programs or plans for anyone seeking help with drug abuse. The EPAs were not being used. So Lee McPhail, who is fully aware of the drug program, and this is a quote from his autobiography, "We did understand the factors that may be players' primes for drug problems, like you see the difference in salary, 1966, $19,000, 1982, $240,000. Players had a lot of extra money, they spent a lot of time away from families, and they were under constant pressure. So McPhail gets a gift. Miller decides to step aside in 1982, and in his place is Ken Moffitt. Moffitt and McPhail decide that the only way to attack the drug problem was through a joint united effort. And here's a quote from Moffitt here, or from McPhail, from McPhail's book. Now then, in November 1983, something happens. Moffitt, of course, gets fired. And the reason Moffitt claims is that the reason for his dismissal was his willingness to work with management on the creation of a strong anti-drug program. And he quotes, "Drugs aren't a win-lose type of situation. There are kids who are messed up and need help, and there are ways to do this short of confrontation. You can't go to the mat on every issue." So with all this, so McPhail, with Moffitt gone, McPhail feels, okay, well, we have a problem. Are we going to even have a drug program? Because after Moffitt leaves, Donald Fair takes over. And to Kuhn's surprise, Fair decides to open up negotiations for a drug program. Now, in the spring of 1984, negotiations on a program almost break down when the MLBPA refuses to accept any type of drug testing. The sides only agree when the joint drug doctors come together, get both sides together and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We can have a reasonable cause type of drug testing program. Kuhn did not have faith in the program, but he decided to go along if McPhail wanted to. Kuhn would go along with the program on the condition that a number of changes be made in the program that would commit the Players Association to a more positive attitude toward voluntary drug testing. And the 1984 joint drug agreement becomes really Kuhn's legacy in the fight against drugs. And here briefly is just I'm not going to go through it because you guys have the handout for the entire joint drug agreement. Not only is the agreement in the Hall of Fame, you can also find it in Kuhn's book, Hardball, where he talks about it a lot. But briefly, in the 1984 joint drug agreement, a pact that was far ahead of its time, the parties converted drug use from disciplinary issue into a medical question. Three doctors, one selected by the union, one by the owners, and one by the other two doctors, determined the facts of any particular case and applied pre-established treatment conditions. And here are some of the agreements here, some of the features. It seems to me that the program was mainly devised to stop the rising tide of cocaine. There are some players that are having, you know, big problems with cocaine, the expos and things to that effect. So quickly, let's go to Ubroth real quick, because Ubroth made it clear that when he became commissioner, they were going to ask me to work on drugs, economics, and work on the popularity of the game. Those were going to be his three goals of the one term. Ubroth met with Fair and Miller, and they weren't going to budge on the cause of testing, and so he decided to circumvent the union just to show the public, hey, at least somebody is doing it. Ubroth briefly, he really goes on the offensive. He issues a memorandum calling everybody to take drug tests except for major league players. And Fair saw the guidelines as wanting to force the MLBPA to join a program that it simply did not agree with. Now, Ubroth wanted to do this in fear of a scandal. Of course, in 1985, baseball had its worst scandal since the Black Sox. That was the Pittsburgh drug trials. Now, critics and supporters, George Steinbrenner, see what he said. Frank Cashin was a supporter. And Fair, of course, was a critic. And the ACLU said that Ubroth's plan was a violation of the Fourth Amendment. In 85, during the World Series, the owners decide to abandon the 1984 agreement. And they said they can't get the union to accept more testing, but we're going to go ahead and abandon it because maybe there's some other way we can do this, kind of circumvent the union. And the MLBP owners wanted to have a plan like the NBA. The NBA was real tough on drugs in the 80s, and even to the point of permanent, you know, expulsion from the game. Okay, last chance for our agreement. Owners decided to insert drug clauses into players' new guaranteed and non-guaranteed contracts. This worked for a little while, then the MLBPA decided to file a grievance against it using a case involving Joel Youngblood. And the Thomas Roberts clause, the Thomas Roberts case, what happened is the independent arbitrator decided that the owners acted unilaterally, and it was a violation of the CBA. So the so the owners lost this case. And this was the last time that Ubroth and the owners decided to have a drug program. Ubroth tried it one more time to reach out to the players, but Thomas Roberts' case was going on. The MLBPA decided to reject it. The MLBPA won the Roberts case, and this was the last time that baseball had a drug testing policy until 2002 when the sides finally agreed. But in Ubroth's infinite wisdom, Ubroth declares in front of Congress that the drug problem in baseball, it's over. We've defeated it. Even though they don't have a program that's agreed upon. But Ubroth decides, hey, it's done. It's over with. You might have this little flare-up every once in a while, but baseball has returned integrity and dignity to itself. Now, think what you want about it, but I thought it was a little, you know, hollow, so to speak. So this last two slides or so is the demon is out of the bag. Now, of course, at the end of the 80s, you had Canseco and these guys and the infamous game in 87 where people are shouting steroids. And this is a new problem. No agreed-upon drug policy between management and union at the end of Ubroth's term allowed for a new problem to emerge, a drug that would not be so easily identifiable on a simple drug test. Commissioner Faye Vincent adds steroids to his policy in 91, saying players are not subject to unannounced testing for illegal drugs. However, players who have admitted to illegal drug use or who have been detected using illegal drugs are subject to mandatory testing for the balance of their professional career. In the final analysis, this critical period in baseball history, Ubroth and the MLBPA, in my opinion, inadvertently allowed anabolic steroids to infect the game. And here are some players that were suspended by Major League Baseball for their use of illegal drugs. And final slide. Baseball must carry out this obligation if the game and its athletes are to maintain their revered place in the eyes of the public, particularly the young. Of course, you have Griffey here, and you have Bonds. And then, of course, everybody's favorite, as far as I'm concerned. Here you go. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Do we have any questions?
Right. Wow, I can't believe I did that. Baseball versus drugs? Yes, they actually full graphics of drugs that were dangerous on the streets and things to that effect. And it has a list. It has full color graphics. I mean, there's one page where there's like all is one page full of nothing but pills on one side and pills on the other. And then there's actually pages with cocaine, marijuana, things to that effect. I have a copy of it, but, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame is real nice about it. If you want to have a copy of it, just call them up, and they'll send you a copy of it.
Okay.
You know, things to that effect. So,
In your research, was there any indication that Faye Vincent's position is what caused him his firing?
What was that?
The change of commissioner. Uh-huh. Does your research connect the change of commissioner to Bowie Kuhn to this particular set of episodes?
I think that the change of commissioner was, Ubroth was more of a, he was the guy that really wanted to get, Kuhn really wanted to get rid of drugs, but Ubroth was more of this 1980s, let's just get rid of it and circumvent the union sort of guy. Yeah, sorry. But really, all three of them, even Faye Vincent, they really wanted to get rid of this pall that was infecting the game. And because, like today, with the steroid issue, players got sick and tired of being associated with users. They really got sick and tired of it. Because everywhere they went, I think Alexander talks about in his book, during negotiations, it got to a point where agents and baseball club managers were asking this, is he clean? So players got really sick and tired of it. Yeah.
Are players today routinely tested for cocaine, marijuana?
Yes. Yes. The drug testing today, I heard an interview with Bud Selig. It's the most stringent in sports today.
Just curious, any idea if the non-North American leagues suffer the same drug issues? I'm thinking in particular Korea, Japan, Dominican, Venezuela.
Do they have the same type of issues?
Yeah.
I think especially in the Mexican League, the Caribbean League, since drugs are such a huge part of society. That's interesting you said that, because the next aspect of my research when I enter the PhD program this fall is going to be on steroids and also going further into this. But people like Dennis Oilcan Boyd, he got hooked on drugs, and he says, especially when he went to Latin America, and everybody knows the huge influx of Latin American players, and unfortunately that is a huge part of their culture. Now in Japan, I think it would be very interesting to look there to see how much drugs are a part of the culture in Japan and how players feel as far as amphetamines, things like that. Good question. Hold on, Steph.
It seems to me that drug testing is not particularly effective at all.
Right.
If you go to Biogenesis, those people didn't fail drug tests. They got busted by documents and so it's, I mean, I don't, I just in my own mind, I wonder, are we weak These guys can afford the best of the best designer PEDs. We're not going to bust them. The people we're busting are minor leaguers who can't afford the good stuff. So I wonder if, why don't, and I'm just throwing it out there, why not just let players take the PEDs? As long as we want an even playing field. I don't think, myself as a fan, I don't care if Barry Bonds takes a PED. What I do care if he has an unfair advantage relative to the pitcher, relative to his opponents. So if we just let everybody take the PEDs, because we can't bust them. Our testing isn't sophisticated enough. Why don't we just let them in?
Well, it's funny you said that, because a lot of the stuff I'm reading now is that it's gotten to a point where it's almost like the gambling issue. If you want to catch the best gamblers, you hire as your security the best gamblers. You know, and in this case, when it comes to drugs, they're actually testing a lot further ahead of, you know, they seem to be one step ahead of the designer drugs, because the science is so much more advanced than the people like Balco and Biogenesis. And even that's going to be the hardest part of this thing as we go forward, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I see your point. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's funny you said that, because, you know, there was an episode on Two and a Half Men where Charlie Sheen goes, I'm just going to say it. Baseball was better with steroids. But that's Charlie Sheen.
Joe, we've got one last question, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to everybody else's. You certainly can duck outside afterwards, and he'll be happy to answer more. One last concise question.
Are you saying that Major League Baseball is testing for marijuana as well? It is amazing to me to think no players are using that.
Yes, baseball has the most stringent drug testing policies as far as sports goes. Even up there with the Olympics, they test for everything. Now,
thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Joe's, again, his presentation, his copies are back in the back, and he will be outside and take some questions.